earth, and sky.
The world we live in, for it to be so opaque to us, just doesn't seem like as much fun to me as if we could follow the detective story that led to that world. And that's what science is to me. It's a great detective story.
You are listening to actor and writer Alan Alda, star of the television show MASH and host of Scientific American Frontiers. Alda's written a new play called Dear Albert, based on the life of Albert Einstein and debuting at the World Science Festival. The festival is a celebration of science discovery where people can join over a dozen Nobel laureates, artists, performers, and more in over 40 events starting May 28th in New York City. Up next, Alda talks about his passion for science. So tell me about the World Science Festival. This is basically putting the top scientists in the world together with some dynamic artists.
And most of all, with the public, every aspect of the public. I mean, people who have an avid interest in science to people who are just plain curious to other scientists and school kids. There are going to be an enormous number of events around New York City. Street fairs and events taking place in parks and halls and theaters around the city, and as you said, there will be performances of music, dance, theater that are related to science, that sometimes are inspired by science, and I'm really looking forward to them. I hope I can get to a few of them because I'm doing a couple myself, so I'm not that free to run around town to see others, but some of them sound fascinating to me.
So this is something like come for the art, leave with the science.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and you will get a chance to, because after each of these art performances, there will be a discussion afterwards with scientists to kind of dig into the performance and figure out what the relevance to science is, and people can stay for that and get a double treat.
You've described our world as something that runs about as smoothly as a car with square wheels. You know, I love that. What are scientists doing to kind of help round out the wheels a little bit?
Well, I think some of the reasons why science is important now are kind of clear to everybody, and yet there's still this distance between us and science. When I say us, I mean ordinary people who aren't trained in science. I mean, it's really clear that policymakers in government make decisions about what science they'll fund, and they don't always do it with real information or real understanding about what it is that they're not funding or what they are funding, what they're holding up research in. And that kind of thing. And this affects everything. It affects medicines. It affects what we eat and how we affect the atmosphere all over the earth. There are so many things that an understanding of science could be used for to make our lives better. But I think a reason that Einstein would have approved of is that science is fun, and if you pursue what's fun in science, I think you get a deeper understanding and you can pull all kinds of ideas together in your head because you get them in a fundamental way. And you're not getting them because it somehow does you good to get them. It's not like eating your broccoli. It's that it tastes good. It's really fun to get into it. And that will lead, in fact, that will lead to all the other practical benefits that you would get if you knew more about science.
One of the things I come away with learning more and more about science is just the fact that it even is understandable. And I'm glad you mentioned Einstein a second ago. I was thinking about something that he said, in that the eternal mystery of the world is in its comprehensibility. What are your thoughts on what scientists bring to the table in understanding our world?
Well, they bring an enormous amount. And in fact, they bring so much that they've compressed it often into formulas and into terms that are simply not available to the rest of us. And one of the things that we have to do is find the human point of contact, I think, with science, so that we can communicate with one another. And it's interesting you we picked up on Einstein, because I've been thinking about Einstein a lot lately, because I've written a piece that's going to be performed at the World Science Festival called Dear Albert. And it's called Dear Albert in part because it's a reading of letters between Albert Einstein and his wives. He had two wives and a lot of girlfriends. It's a look at his private life. He was so focused on what you described as the mystery of the universe, and was amazed, I think, that it was comprehensible at all, because it's so hard to understand. And it's very interesting to me that the more science understands about the universe, the more we have to think in ways that we're not accustomed to thinking. It's really counterintuitive. I guess we prospered as a species by adapting to the world the way we see it. But the way we see it and the way we're accustomed to think about it is not exactly, and sometimes not at all, the way it really is, according to some of the most advanced thinking on it. So there really is a lot to be entertained by, because there's nothing more fun than shifting your point of view and seeing things in a cockeyed way. Otherwise, we wouldn't go to a house of mirrors. I mean, we love that. It's really fun to see things from a totally different point of view.
It seems as if the separation of how scientists describe the world and how a parent describes the universe to their kid, that separation is perhaps getting larger and larger. Tell me a little bit about the World Science Festival and bridging the gap between...
It's very interesting to me that in so many different fields in science, there would be a generation of people brought up and taught in school certain things about the world. And then by the time they're adults and they're trying to explain the world to their children, science will have discovered that what they were taught didn't scratch the surface. And in fact, it's kind of wrong. I mean, we've ignored things. For a long time, we had stretches of DNA that were called junk DNA. And now that's beginning to look like an area that has very important information in our DNA force. We didn't really know that there was such a thing as dark matter and dark energy. In fact, we thought the universe we could observe was it. And that's only about 4% of the universe what we can observe. This other stuff, the major part of the universe, we discounted completely. We discounted for a long time the white matter in the brain. And we always were talking about, take care of your gray matter, use your gray matter. Teachers were always saying that when I was a kid. Well, I talked with a scientist yesterday who's spending her life studying the white matter, where all of the fibers and cables are that connect the lumps of gray matter together, and without which we wouldn't be able to function. So all of these things that we think we sort of know about because we don't have to know about them, we know enough about them and we can discount them, it turns out that one after another of those things become interesting to science and become a way of looking at the universe that we never imagined before.
Do you think that there are some questions that are even too big for science to answer?
Well, sure there. I think it seems to me that, and I think Einstein felt this way, that with all we know, we don't really know much about how we work. And that's kind of important to us, because we're the ones who can destroy us. There are plenty of natural disasters that can get us too, earthquakes and meteors and all kinds of things, but we live in constant danger from something much closer to us than any of those, which is us, and we don't know how we work. I just did a version of Stravinsky's L'Histoire du Soldat, which that I directed and acted in, and it's about a soldier who makes a deal with the devil. It's written during the First World War. And at the end, the devil wins, and it seems a little like a downer to some people. But the fact is, I think it's kind of true with regard to our ability to figure out how we can exist without needing to resort to war. So far, the devil has won on that one for millennia. the study of the brain, the study of behavior, the study of emergent properties in complex systems. That's leading us to behaviors that we can't figure out. We don't know what to do about it, and we're caught in the swirl of it. We're like leaves blowing in the wind. And if we could figure that out, and so far science has had as hard a time figuring that out. It's been as mysterious and as invisible to us as dark matter and dark energy. If we could figure out our own dark matter, we'd be a lot better off. But so far, that's beyond science.
Alan, thanks again for your time today. I did want to ask one last question, and this has something to do with what you talked about in describing the joys of science,
sure.
Something that you call the wonder of nature, and how scientists share that with other people. What did you mean by that?
I think I could put it this way, and it's something that Richard Feynman talked about, too. Feynman had a friend who was an artist who said to Feynman many times, "You know, I can appreciate the beauty of a flower because I'm an artist, but scientists like to take the flower apart, and they make it dull." And Feynman said, "You know, I don't agree with that at all. I can appreciate the beauty of a flower. That beauty is available to all of us, and including me, I think." But he said, "But I can also go deeper into the beauty of the flower. I can figure out the processes that make it what it is. I can examine how it evolved to have colors that would attract insects that could pollinate it. And I could even wonder about the insect's own ability to see colors, and do they have an aesthetic sense?" I mean, all kinds of questions come up when you go below the surface of the flower. When I was a kid, I read the Romantic poets, and I loved them. And they love daffodils. You know, my heart leaps up when I behold a host of lovely daffodils. But all they were concerned about was that thin exterior of the daffodil. And when I began to read what scientists had to say about nature, I saw that they were going into the flower. They were looking at the cell structure of it. They were looking at the molecular structure. They then went down into that almost infinite universe of the particles in the nucleus of the atoms. There's poetry in what the scientists are doing that in a way is deeper and richer than what the Romantic poets were doing, just loving the outsides of these daffodils. The wonder of it is that there's no end to it. The more that people know about science, at least insofar as I read about it, the more people seem to understand about the universe, the more questions are raised. There seems to be no end to the beauty, no end to the questioning, no end to the new questions that arise. And it's funny that every few years, maybe every 50 years, 100 years, somebody says, "Well, we now know everything there is to know about science, everything we need to know about nature, or everything we need to know. Physics is dead." You know, people have said things like this. And then all of a sudden, they realize that 96% of the universe is something we can't even observe, but we can figure out that it's there. There's no end to it, and when we figure out some way to observe it, we'll find out that has raised other questions. New doors are opened, and there's a whole new landscape to explore. How could you not be filled with wonder at that?
Thanks today to Alan Alda and the World Science Festival. On the web at worldsciencefestival.com. You can subscribe to this and other free science podcasts on our website. Just visit the subscribe page at earthsky.org. I'm Jorge Salazar for Earth and Sky, a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.